Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has again called for an immediate stop to the fighting in Sudan.
I strongly condemn the indiscriminate bombardment of civilian areas, including healthcare facilities. And I call on the parties to stop combat operations in densely populated areas and to allow and hinder the humanitarian aid operations.
Despite a massive evacuation, analysts say foreign interest in Sudan's conflict remains high. The U.S. reiterates support for Mozambique's fight against Cabo Delgado militants. A member of the upper house of Britain's parliament says the government should investigate a British citizen and close ally of Zimbabwe President Mnangagwa. Cameroon deploys troops on its borders with Nigeria and Central African Republic amid a spike in rebel and terrorist attacks. South Africa wants to pull out of the International Criminal Court.
Our view is that we would like this matter of unfair treatment to be properly discussed. But in the meantime, governing party has decided once again that there should be a pull out.
And Nigerian health authorities race to contain a meningitis outbreak. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has again called for an immediate end to the fighting in Sudan between the army led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the rapid support forces led by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo Himeti. In a speech to the UN Security Council Tuesday night, Guterres says the 10-day-old conflict has killed at least 450 people and more than 5,000 injured. This comes as the World Health Organization announced on Tuesday that there is a high risk of biological hazard in Khartoum after fighters seized the National Public Health Laboratory, which contains dangerous pathogens, including measles and cholera. Secretary General Guterres said it is incumbent on the two generals to put the interests of the Sudanese people first.
For 10 days, Sudan has been ravaged by a deadly conflict, despite calls for a ceasefire from inside and outside the country. At least 450 people have been killed, including four members of the United Nations family. And more than 4,000 people have been injured, and tens of thousands have fled their homes. Reports from Khartoum paint a devastating picture. People are trapped indoors, terrified, with dwindling supplies of food, water, medicines, and fuel. Health services are near collapse, and according to the World Health Organization, several hospitals are being used by armed groups. Across the country, there are reports of armed clashes. People have fled their homes in Blue Nile and North Kordofan states and across Darfur. Refugees and returnees have arrived in Chad, Egypt, and South Sudan. I thank the governments of those countries for their support. These 10 days of violence and chaos are heartbreaking. A prolonged full-scale war is unbearable to contemplate. Sudan borders seven countries, all of which have either been involved in conflict or seen serious civil unrest over the past decade. It is a gateway to the Sahel, where insecurity and political instability are making an already catastrophic humanitarian situation even worse. Across the wider region, poverty and hunger are rampant. The climate emergency, the global cost of living crisis, and soaring levels of debt are taking a terrible toll. And in some places, humanitarian aid is all that is keeping famine at bay. The power struggle in Sudan is not only putting that country's future at risk, it's lighting a fuse that could detonate across borders, causing immense suffering for years and setting development back for decades. Excellencies, the fighting must stop immediately. We need an all-out effort for peace. I call on the parties to the conflict, on Generals Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo Himeti, and the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces to silence the guns. It is incumbent on Sudanese leaders to put the interests of their people front and center. This conflict will not and must not be resolved on the battlefield with the bodies of Sudan's people. The Sudanese people have made their wishes very clear. They want peace and the restoration of civilian rule through the transition to democracy. The parties to the conflict must respect the 72-hour ceasefire brokered by the United States and come together to establish a permanent cessation of hostilities. I urge all council members and other member states and regional organizations with influence to press them to de-escalate tensions and return to the negotiating table immediately.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressing the Security Council Tuesday night. A massive evacuation of foreigners from Sudan remains underway as the conflict there reaches the 10-day mark. Analysts tell VOA that as foreigners scramble to leave the country, it does not mean they are going for good, because there is a lot at stake, including the stability of East and Central Africa, if the war in Sudan drags on. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has the story from Nairobi, Kenya.
The past couple of days have seen many foreign nationals in Sudan pack up their belongings and leave in a hurry as countries try to pull their citizens out of harm's way. The troops of Sudanese Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Rapid Support Forces Commander General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, have been engaged in fierce fighting the past 10 days. Kwaku Nwama, professor of international politics at American University in Washington, tells VOA that both sides have support from abroad.
The government has some kind of legitimacy because, after all, it's this official army. But on the government side, you have the Egyptians openly supporting General Burhan. The Israelis are also in there. On the Hamiti side of the conflict, you have the Saudis and the Emiratis, and you have Libya, Khalifa Haftar, who incidentally had good relations with the United States, but he's on that side of the conflict.
Nwama says the United States, which brokered the latest ceasefire, is concerned not only about Sudan, but about the stability of Sudan's neighbor to the west.
The United States is worried about Chad. Chad is a strong American ally, and we see Russia is already in the vicinity in Central African Republic. And so if Hamiti wins this conflict, the Darfur region can become a staging base for Arab rebels who are challenging the government in Chad.
All countries mentioned have offered to mediate the Sudan crisis. Haftar's Libyan National Army vehemently denied accusations last week of providing support to either of the two parties and has also offered to mediate the crisis. Since the conflict started, many ceasefires have come and gone. The latest one, agreed to Monday, seems to be holding, although sporadic clashes have been reported. Murithi Mutiga is the Africa Program Director of the International Crisis Group.
For the moment, the stakes for the two armed forces seem existential. All of them are determined to hold Khartoum because it's the center of power, wealth, and authority in Sudan. So both of them, because they distrust each other, they see offers for ceasefires as traps.
Sustained trouble within Sudan will be very problematic, Mutiga pointed out to VOA.
The suffering internally is horrific, but the regional implications will be just as serious. It's a country that's the crossroads of the Horn of Africa, the Sahel, Middle East and North Africa. It's the third largest country in Africa. It is one really that is surrounded by places with a lot of instability.
After multiple attempts to reach Reem Abbas, a writer and researcher in Khartoum, we were finally able to reach her today. She said they have not had electricity for 2 days.
The capital is becoming a ghost city. People are leaving in droves. They're trying to get on buses to go to other states. Some are trying to cross the border into Ethiopia, South Sudan, and Egypt.
She says she's worried about the looting and the rise of what she called criminal activity.
Civilians were the ones that actually looted some shops and some factories. So we are going to see. So war is not only about, you know, shelling and shooting and so on. War is also about, humanitarian needs that if they're not met, you know, you just see rising criminal activity and you see a state of complete chaos.
Abbas says she's worried that this is what she and others are going to see in the coming weeks if the war continues. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has said that his country will quit the International Criminal Court, which in March issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin. Kate Butler reports from Johannesburg.
President Ramaphosa made the comments at a joint press conference with visiting Finnish counterpart Sauli Niinistö. Ramaphosa said there had long been a feeling in the governing African National Congress that the ICC treats certain countries unfairly, likely referring to the fact that many African leaders have been brought before the court in The Hague, Netherlands.
And our view is that we would like this matter of unfair treatment to be properly discussed. But in the meantime, governing party has decided once again that there should be a pull out.
The ANC wanted to pull out of the court some years ago, but was prevented from doing so by a South African court that found the move unconstitutional. Recently, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin over alleged war crimes in Ukraine. Putin has been invited to a meeting of the BRICS Group of Emerging Nations in August in Johannesburg. BRICS nations include Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. The ANC is a staunch friend of Moscow and has refused to condemn the invasion of Ukraine. If he does attend as a signatory to the ICC, South Africa is obliged to arrest him. However, Pretoria refused to arrest former Sudanese dictator Omar al-Bashir when he visited in 2015, despite an ICC arrest warrant out for him. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 26. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The U.S. is reiterating its support for Mozambique in the country's fight against Islamist militants in oil-rich Cabo Delgado province. A visiting U.S. official says the U.S. will continue to provide security assistance and work with the World Bank to help build schools and hospitals in the troubled region. Charles Manguiro has the story from the Mozambican capital, Maputo.
The U.S. State Department's Director of the Office of Foreign Assistance, Daphna Rand, spoke with VOA during a three-day visit to Mozambique that wrapped up Tuesday. Rand said that to undermine support for the militants, the U.S. is appealing to young Mozambicans to dream big, complete their education, and build their own communities in hopes of boosting Mozambique's economic stability. She says Washington also is trying to bolster the military to better defend vulnerable communities.
So one area of here is to really ensure that young people are not, there's no appeal of radical groups. So that's very, very important. We also, of course, have a security partnership with the Mozambican forces, and we are working on training and cooperation on the defense and security side.
Oil giants ExxonMobil and Total are among the big international energy companies developing natural gas projects offshore in the northern Mozambique. But the Mozambican government has struggled to stop attacks from militants in Cabo Delgado since October 2017, despite the assistance of the troops from Rwanda and the countries in the Southern Africa Regional Bloc, SADC. Humanitarian organizations estimated that the conflict in Cabo Delgado resulted in close to 5,000 casualties, and according to the UN High Commission for Refugees, UNHCR, about 1 million people have been displaced from their homes since this crisis started in 2017. Little is known about the insurgents, though initial attacks were claimed by a group known as Anlusuna Wajama. More recently, Islamic State has claimed responsibility for a number of attacks. According to Rand, addressing terrorism in Mozambique requires multiple measures, including local development programs and building basic infrastructure, such as schools and hospitals.
Other types of assistance. So we're looking at programs that will increase infrastructure. We're working with the World Bank to support their efforts in that, to make sure that there are schools, make sure that there's hospitals come back, to make sure that there's, you know, the local governance is possible, really basic things like identity papers and a functioning local government. So that's a top priority for us right now.
Mozambique ranks among the least developing countries in the world. The United States is the largest bilateral donor to the country, providing over $560 million in assistance annually. Charles Manguiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Cameroon's military says it is redeploying troops to its borders with Nigeria and the Central African Republic after an increase in attacks from militants and rebels. Villagers along the borders, its security worsened after an uneasy calm led the military to withdraw troops. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says several million civilians in its border towns and villages are living with chronic fear because attacks by rebels and militants have been increasing since January. The military says hundreds of Boko Haram fighters are still hiding in the bush after last week's invasion of the Mayomo-Skuta district on the northern border with Nigeria. The Cameroon government says several hundred homes were set on fire, leaving thousands homeless. Joseph Betty Asomo is Cameroon's defense minister. He says President Paul Biya ordered him to convene an emergency security meeting in Yaoundé this week to examine ways of stopping the attacks. Asomo says a resurgence of Boko Haram's aggressive attacks is causing untold suffering on civilians on the border with Nigeria after a long period of relative peace. He says militias created by civilians are finding it very difficult to single-handedly combat thousands of Islamist extremists who have been crossing to Cameroon from Nigeria since January to commit atrocities on civilians and government troops. Asomo said a week hardly goes by without large-scale attacks by the extremists. He spoke on Tuesday during the top security meeting, also attended by police chiefs. Northern border villagers say Cameroon's military began withdrawing troops when Abubakar Shekau, the leader of the Islamist group, was declared killed. Nigeria's government confirms Shekau, the notorious leader of the Boko Haram terror group, died in May 2021. Cameroon's military denies accusations that troops have abandoned civilians. The military says it simply changed strategy, but the protection of civilians and their property remains a priority. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A member of the upper house of Britain's parliament says the government should investigate a British citizen and close ally of Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The man appeared in an Al Jazeera investigative documentary series claiming that he could launder and smuggle more than $1.2 billion to Zimbabwe using his diplomatic pouch. Evan Zinica of the Zimbabwe Service reports.
Lord Jonathan Oates, who represents in the House of Lords Debbie Grange in the county of West Yorkshire in England, says he wants his government to explain the steps it will take to investigate British citizen and self-proclaimed prophet Mr. Hubert Angel and other Britons mentioned in the Al Jazeera four-part documentary called Gold Mafia, released recently. The documentary was done by undercover journalists who posed as investors who wanted to move money from Hong Kong to Zimbabwe. Angel is Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa's ambassador at large to Europe and the Americas. Oates says the British government should also dig deep into Angel's private life, as there are indications that he may have fraudulently obtained his United Kingdom citizenship.
They do involve allegations against British citizens. I've tabled questions for written answer in the House of Lords to ask the government to investigate these issues and to so that we can understand what action is being taken to ensure that the named individuals do not profit from their alleged crime.
Angel is an evangelical preacher and founder of United Kingdom-based Spirit Embassy, a Pentecostal ministry. Gold mined in Zimbabwe is being allegedly sold to mansions in Dubai under the cover of fake companies that are laundering proceeds of the precious mineral worth millions of dollars. Some observers say they are baking oats, as Zimbabwe may be losing millions of dollars a year in potential gold revenue. An independent economic expert, Ms. Chennai Mutambasere, based in the United Kingdom, says Britain should investigate Angel Doolan and all its citizens allegedly involved in the gold scam.
UK has got more than a vested interest, because these individuals are actually British citizens. So I'm talking about Hubert Angel, I'm talking about Ricky Doolan, as well as their associates. Lord Oates also highlighted the discrepancies surrounding Ambassador Hubert Angel's identity.
Angel and Doolan did not respond to calls on their mobile phone, but Angel's Zimbabwe-based attorney and law professor at the University of Zimbabwe, Lovemore Maduku, told journalists in Harare that his client was aware of the Al Jazeera sting operation. Maduku claimed that Angel was a sanctioned decoy in a classified national counter intelligence operation. Zimbabwean authorities have declined to speak about this so-called intelligence operation. Information Minister Monica Mutsangwa told VOA journalists recently that Zimbabwe will carry out investigations on the gold scam.
Government takes the allegations which are raised in this documentary seriously and has directed relevant organs to institute investigations into the issues raised.
But opposition Citizens Coalition for Change interim leader Mr. Nelson Chamisa is demanding that Mnangagwa must face the nation and explain the allegations published in the documentary. Evans Zeninga for VOA News in Washington.
Nigeria health authorities are racing to contain an outbreak of meningitis that has reportedly killed dozens of women and children. The nation's Center for Disease Control and Prevention said the outbreak has spread to 21 out of 36 states. The viral infection, which causes inflammation of the protective membranes of the brain and spinal cord, require specialized care, which experts say major parts of the country lack. Dr. Lars Eze is a public health physician. He tells viewers Chinodu Ofor that public health officials were slow in taking required steps to stop the spread of the infection.
We know that this time of the year, every year during the dry season, there's usually an upsurge in the incidence of meningitis across the country. Meningitis is a condition that's preventable through immunization, especially among children. The country has, over the years, made significant progress in terms of campaigns, in terms of creating assets. But there is still a lot of how to reach communities and areas, you know, where people don't get these. There is still the cold chain management that, you know, sometimes get to break the cold chain, and, you know, the vaccines might not be in the very best conditions. So as it has to do with children, there's a lot of work going on led by the National Primary Healthcare Development Agency. But Nigeria has 36 states, and health requires certain responsibilities, not just from the federal government, but also the subnational governments at the state and local government level. Massive sensitization and education is required, and this is an area that we're not doing quite well. Over 300 languages, local languages, systems at those levels.
Some other health experts are predicting that with meningitis now spreading to almost half of the states in Nigeria, that sadly the death toll may rise. What are you seeing? What are the indicators?
Yes, with rising cases, of course, definitely there are chances there could be a rise in death toll, which is most unfortunate. One of the things we've recorded, we're dealing with at the moment in Nigeria, is the human resource crisis in the health sector because of poor working conditions, the number of other factors, rising inflation and all of that, security challenges in some parts of the country. So health workers are leaving the country in droves. While they are leaving, we are not getting as many who are taking up the positions they are leaving. Also, the meningitis cases tend to happen more in less developed parts or in rural communities where access to quality health care is also minimal. So people within the country, health workers, tend to cluster more around the urban areas than in the rural areas. So that also makes it much more difficult to access quality health care, given that the level of health care required in the case of meningitis, you have to do imaging of the brain, you have to give IV fluids, IV injections of antibiotics, do very close monitoring.
That was Dr. Lars Eze, a public health physician speaking from Abuja, Nigeria, with VOA's Chinedu Ofor. I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a wonderful day.